Live from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, it's Derek Wills, Ryan Pinder, and my name is Pat Steinberg. It's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, and news that I certainly wasn't expecting to wake up to this morning was the Flames have sent Oliver Shillington to the American Hockey League today. He goes down, and Brandon Davidson gets the recall. He won't play tonight, but has been recalled after a really nice start to his season with the Stockton Heat. What do we make of the decision? Oliver Shillington down, Brandon Davidson up.
Well, I've been told that Brandon Davidson has been unbelievable with the Stockton Heat this season. I mean, offensively, you can just look at his stats. 10 points in 10 games, so he leads the Stockton Heat in scoring, and he's also tied for the AHL lead in points by defensemen. So, great start to the season for him, so I think this is a bit of a reward for a guy who has looked like an NHLer in past seasons. As far as Oliver Shillington is concerned, I think he's been progressing nicely. Maybe took a bit of a step back in that 4-3 overtime victory over the Coyotes a couple of nights ago, and his ice time as a result went down. So if he's not going to be playing many minutes, or if he's going to be sitting in the press box and not playing at all, I think because you don't have to expose him on waivers, aren't you just better to send him to the Stockton Heat? Let him play in all situations, especially on the penalty kill, so that when he comes back up to the Calgary Flames, you can give him more minutes by using him on the PK, and now you're taxing guys like Giordano and Hamonic potentially less, because I think this is one of the reasons why yesterday was a maintenance day for those two guys and a couple of other Flames.
Yeah, the only, I think, caveat on that would be he's been probably their sixth best defenseman. He's played more than Michael Stone. He beat Brandon Davidson for a job. And to be fair, even if he learns penalty killing, it doesn't necessarily mean he'll be better than the likes of Hamonic and Giordano at the NHL level. They've been doing this for probably, what, close to a decade or longer in Gio's instance. I don't have a problem with it. Is it the right thing to do? I know that was kind of the tease. We'll see. I'm not sure that they're improving their number six defenseman, but long-term I could see it being very beneficial for Shillington, and I certainly understand the Flames wanting to see what they have in Davidson. The hot start that Cale MacLean spoke to us about on Monday afternoon would certainly underline that you should know what you have there. You're probably going to, if you're dealing with trade calls involving defensemen, if you're trying to add a guy, if you're trying to subtract a guy, you want to know what you have. And I think this is an opportunity to see that as well. But I wouldn't be surprised one bit if 2 weeks from now, Oliver Shillington's back here and is still their sixth best defenseman that helps them win more today, right?
It seemed like Shillington was going to come out tonight. Like, it seemed like they were going to bring back Michael Stone into the lineup anyway. And I wonder if they looked at it and said, okay, Shillington played about 10 minutes against the Coyotes on Tuesday. We're going to take him out of the lineup. Maybe this is a time to get him down and start playing some big minutes, because he's averaging about 13 minutes a game right now. Get him down to Stockton. Get him playing some big minutes. And I think it was, okay, this is a good time to do that. We have the freedom to do it. Davidson's already cleared waivers, so he can come up, and they've got 30 days on an NHL roster to keep him here without having to clear going back the other way. And for Davidson, I think that, yeah, there's that reward that you talked about, and I really think that they want to know what they have from an NHL depth standpoint, that if they run into injuries, they know which guy they can call up, and they know what that guy can do at the NHL level on their team, and if they want to make a trade, because I think we're all well aware that this team is still very tight against the cap and would like to make some sort of deal at some point to give themselves a little more breathing room. If they can see what they have in Davidson and he proves that, yeah, he can step in and be a fine number six defenseman, and he's fine if he sits for three as a seven, comes back in for two as a six, that type of scenario. If he can prove that and that works, then I think that maybe you're a little less hesitant to pull the trigger on a deal that might move somebody on the blue line out. So I think there's a lot of things at work here. So I don't mind the decision. I was not necessarily expecting it, but I think I get where they're coming from in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I mean, I do wonder if it's got anything to do with something that Bill Peters said yesterday when he was addressing the media and had a lot to say. He said that moving forward, they're not just going to hand things out to guys. Guys are going to have to earn what they get, whether that be a spot on the roster or ice time or special teams time. So I do wonder if that comes into play with the decision they made. And I know they've been really happy with Michael Stone as well. And if you're going to bring him in, chances are the guy coming out is Shillington, because I think your top five is pretty much set in stone at this point in time. Whether or not it should be, I think that it is. So, you know, Stone comes in. I think he's played pretty well in the four games he's been in this season. And is he Oliver Shillington? No, he's a different type of player. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's going to do some things better than Shillington does, but obviously doesn't have the offensive upside or the skating ability that Shillington does. So there's a little give and take, a little good and bad there. But yeah, I mean, here we are breaking down
number six, seven
defensemen, where I think the Flames have some bigger fish to fry right now.
Yeah, that's true. It absolutely is. And this is sort of the news of the day, but the big picture stuff, they haven't been let down by their 6-7
sure.
defensemen. These guys have been what you'd expect or better from 6-7 defensemen, because it is one of the deeper blue lines in the league.
Maybe more significant is what the blue line is going to look like tonight. It's Derek Wills, Ryan Pinder. I almost said Derek Ryan again.
Troll the people on the text line.
It's Derek Ryan and Pat. I'm speaking here with Derek Ryan.
It's a one-on-one now.
Giordano Hamonic, Hanifin Anderson, Brody Stone. That's what the D pairings are going to look like tonight. I like the idea of seeing what this can give the Flames for a couple periods. Maybe it's three periods. Maybe it's two periods. Maybe it's three games. I don't know. But I like the idea of trying these three new pairings out. I guess two new pairings out, because Brody Stone, we know what to expect there. But Giordano Hamonic, Hanifin Anderson, I'm very curious to see what we see from those two pairings tonight.
I'm curious as well, because really it's an interesting mix of skill sets, isn't it? Because when you have Giordano and Anderson, you've got Giordano, who is one of the best two-way defensemen in the game when he's right, and you've got Anderson, a young guy who Giordano can take under his wing. He's good offensively, and I think there's lots of room for him to grow as far as goals, assists, and points go, and I think he's starting to come into his own defensively as well. But in Hamonic, you've got a defensive defenseman. He's not a two-way guy. So does that potentially open the door more for Giordano to join the rush if he knows that he's got Hamonic back covering his butt, potentially? But then you look at the second pairing, which I think is more interesting for me. So you've got kind of two offensive defensemen on the second pairing. You've got Hanifin, a guy who likes to jump up into the rush. He's a great skater. And you've got Anderson, who has outstanding offensive instincts, and he likes to get involved as well. So I'm not sure this experiment's going to last long. Maybe it will. Maybe they play this way for the rest of the season. Who knows? But interesting combinations for sure to start tonight's game.
Yeah, and the second pair that you're talking about is fascinating to me, because I think they're guys that are known for offense, but that actually quietly, defensively, are much better than they've been at earlier junctures in their career. So I want to see how they're used, and I want to see how long they are stuck together. Because I guess when a decision like this happens, we can say, oh, what do we think about it? Is it good, bad, other? But why did they get to this point? What did Bill Peters see that said, okay, I need to shuffle this up? Mm-hmm. Because last year, and the bulk, the almost the entirety of the season, minus what, injury, Hamonic and Hanifin were not split up.
Yep.
And I've really enjoyed Rasmus Anderson and Mark Giordano when they put those two together, the odd game to start, and when they're behind late, or when you're in a big spot in a game, we've seen it. So I really had a problem with those. So why now would be my curiosity to the decision, because you've already got so much shuffling going up in the forward ranks. I mean, if you're trying to build consistency in this group, it's tough to see that when there's always a new line or a new pair, and it's kind of felt like that blender's been going full speed since the five-game road trip began, with Lindholm starting at the middle and then rotating different guys through the 3M line, be it Mangiapane or Frolik. Lucic comes out and there's some different bottom six composition. Now the D pairs. I understand they haven't been great and they don't deserve to say that the lineup is concrete, but it's also, this could be a challenge for guys playing with guys that they were very small minutes playing with five on five.
I think that this just comes down to that they're not comfortable with what they're seeing from some of their most important players, and that's why it has been a little bit more difficult to just set a lineup card, wake up, and know what you're going to have any given day. And I think that you can make a pretty good argument that Hamonic, Giordano, and Brody have all struggled relative to what they are and what we've seen from them, what we saw from them last year. So I think that you say to yourself, okay, well, this has not been going great. Let's see if this can maybe light a spark and see how they play with one another, and then we can bring it back to the way it was before. Right now is the time, I think, that you can do this and experiment. It's early enough that you can say, okay, we're going to try these things. Maybe something turns into a look that we just think is better than what we've seen before, and maybe it doesn't, and in that case, we can always go back to the tried and true. You still have plenty of time to build that continuity and consistency when it gets into the second half of the season. So I get why they're trying to do it right now. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they're trying some new things. It's because they're not happy with the status quo. I mean, that's quite clear.
Yep.
I just wonder about this second pairing, because on the first pairing, it's pretty clear who the stay-at-home guy is, right? It's Hamonic. On the third pairing, it's pretty clear who the stay-at-home guy is in Stone. On the second pairing, someone needs to be the stay-at-home defenseman. So which guy is it? And maybe it rotates depending on reads and situations and what side of the ice the puck is on. I'm not sure. That second pairing, I'm really intrigued by it going into tonight's game.
I'm also intrigued by it for the future, too,
yep,
because that could be a future pairing for this team, you know, in the next 5-10 years, with Hanifin and Anderson both being 22 years old. Like, that's a really interesting long-term potential look, even if we don't see it for the majority of this season. Maybe starting next year or the year after, that's something we could be seeing, too.
The one bit of caution for the three guys that you noted are veteran and haven't been off to great starts, Giordano, Hamonic, and Brody. They're all playing with new partners minus Brody, and it's not his regular partner. Mm-hmm. So you're asking guys that are off to tough starts to suddenly work with someone new. I'm not saying it's not going to work, but just because you're switching things up doesn't mean, ooh, it's easy now. I'm back to where I was in my career year. Right?
No, it would be more about saying waking you up and
yeah,
maybe that.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
hasn't been good enough. Now you're doing this. Play well,
and
we'll move you back.
To that point, if they don't get off to a good start tonight, I would not be surprised one bit if the second period they come out with what we've been used to seeing all season.
Yeah. Or at least swapping Hamonic and Anderson.
That's what
and
I
Bill,
mean.
Yeah, and Bill Peters said that he wouldn't hesitate to do that this
morning. And he hasn't at all in any game. That's part of not playing well.
I keep saying
he's going to continue to use the blender, right?
I keep saying two periods. For whatever reason, I feel like this is something we see for two periods.
Well, let's see.
Third period come back.
Is there a money line on that, or how does that work?
I haven't found a line for that.
No, that one's not out there.
If it was out there, you'd have found it by now.
Maybe.
Do you gamble at all?
Just a few.
just feels like this is something that we see for 40 minutes. Close game into the third period. Anderson's up with Gio. Hanifin back with Hammond. I could absolutely see it. But I'm interested to see it for however long it lasts for. He's Derek Wills. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Guys, it was an awful start to the season for the New Jersey Devils, but results-wise, much better of late. 4-1-2 over their last seven games. Entering action tonight, they made a lot of additions over the summer. The expectations were higher for them than definitely compared to last year, but I don't really know what to make of them. I saw them against the Winnipeg Jets two nights ago, and you know, they played, from what I saw of that game, they looked pretty decent, but I have not seen a lot of Devils hockey this year, so I don't know what to make of this team entering action tonight at the Dome.
Well, goaltending's been one of their big issues. More so with Corey Schneider than Mackenzie Blackwood, who's going to get his fifth straight start and his seventh start in eight games here tonight. What has happened to Schneider is almost mind-boggling, and I think it has a lot to do with a hip injury that he sustained back in 2016-2017. Listen to this. I was digging this up doing prep for today's game. Corey Schneider, in his first eight NHL seasons, had a league-low 2.16 goals against average and a league-high .925 save percentage.
He was on track to be a Hall of Famer, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are unbelievable, but in four seasons since he started having hip problems, .297, .905. And this year, I mean, he's off to a terrible start, 0-3-1, and just awful goals against and save percentage numbers as well. But Blackwood's been coming around. He's been playing a little bit better. This is a team that's got a lot of young talent. They've got three first overall picks in their lineup. two of them they made. Of course, Taylor Hall was the one they didn't take in first overall by the Oilers back in 2010. Nico Hischier, first overall pick in 2017, got off to a slow start. Didn't have any goals in his first nine games. He's got goals in back-to-back games now, so he started to come around a little bit. Last summer's first overall pick, Jack Hughes, pointless in his first six games, and now he's got 7 points in his last seven games. So it's a team that did not start well. As a matter of fact, when you look at their record to get this season going, 0-4-2 in the first six games, but 4-1-2 in the last seven games. So a Devils team that has a lot of skill. They're young. They're going to make mistakes. They haven't had as many saves as they'd like to have, but still a dangerous team, in my opinion.
I would say, you know, any team, any night in this league, and
yeah,
we've seen it.
Too.
Like Ottawa beat Tampa. That's probably the worst against the best. Certainly was that last year. So I don't think you can ever say, well, geez, this team's not good enough to win games. But I don't see how they are a playoff team out east when you look at the strength of the Atlantic Division with the triumvirate of powerhouses in Tampa, Boston, Toronto, or what they could be, as they've shown us last year, all finishing top five in the regular season. You add in an improved Buffalo club, a hard-charging Montreal club, an improved Florida club. That's just the Atlantic. And I don't think they're anywhere near the hockey club of Washington, Carolina, and the Islanders, who have proven that they're going to play super tight defensively. This is still a team that's probably searching for an identity. It's clearly a team that picked number one overall that's coming out of a rebuild or trying to. And I think it's a group that is going to have to make some decisions real quick on whether they're going to try to make changes to help this year or to postpone that competitiveness for one more year and run through a few sales at the deadline to try to get more assets to help long term.
They are a team that I understand why the expectations were higher this year, and I think that the expectations were they'd be a little bit closer to competitive for a playoff spot as opposed to being in the conversation for number one overall where they were last year. The interesting thing for me about the Devils is what happens with Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
And if they are – look, I could make an argument as to why Hall might want to stay there, but I think the reality is that – it's probably not going to happen. And if that's the case...
You don't think so, eh?
I think I can make an argument as to why it could, because I think they'll be able... If they decide that they're okay with committing financially to it, they can give him the extra year. You've always got the allure of living in Manhattan because you're just across the river. So you've always got the allure of being in one of the great cities in the world. You've got Jack Hughes and a PK Subban and a Nico Hischier and some nice young talent and a team that's starting to, Mackenzie Blackwood, starting to build in that direction. But if you can't convince him and you get the feeling that in January or February that it's just not going to happen and the conversations between Darren Ferris and Ray Shiro just aren't going in the right direction, then I think you have to trade him. And I think that you can continue to I guess, feed into the nice momentum they've got in terms of the way things are trending with some really good young talent. So I'm that's the number one thing that I'm watching. If they can't convince Taylor Hall to sign back there, what do you get for him in a trade, and how does that set you up even better for next year and beyond?
And Jim, real quick, we had Chris Johnson on earlier today. His sense is that he's not back there. Not that it's impossible at all, but if you have to handicap this thing, the field is looking much better than the Devils at this juncture, and he would be more tapped into us. And you can build a case for any team in the league, but that's a guy that's connected. And I also look at the agent and the last few negotiations. They're not easy.
No, but here's how I see it. The Devils have the advantage because he is their player. And
so
they can negotiate
year, right?
with him right now, and they can give him the eighth year. And they seem to want to keep him.
Yep.
So, and they have to know in order to keep him, they're going to have to pay him $10 or $11 million a year, probably for 8 years, because that's the one advantage they have over other teams. They can give him that extra year. And Hall, who's going to turn 28 next week or the week after that, whatever it is, I mean, that financial security that takes him into his mid-30s has to be pretty appealing, as does some of the great young talent that they have put together. So I think staying with the Devils, if I was a betting man, if I was you, Ryan Pinder, I might put a few bucks on that, because, you know, if you're one of the other 30 NHL teams, and you're looking at this guy, he was the Hart Trophy winner a couple of years ago, but he has had a hard time staying healthy. So to get him on the open market, the good thing is you don't have to give any assets up to get him as an unrestricted free agent. But the bad thing is you're probably going to have to overpay him a little bit. What does that mean? That's $10 million plus, right?
Yep.
Is that fair to say? So you're going to give a guy $10 million a year or more for 7 years when there are serious questions about whether or not he can get through a season healthy. Only played, 33 games last season because of injury. And is he really the guy you want to build your team around? I think Taylor Hall is a terrific player. But if you're going to pay a guy $10 million plus, he better be the guy on your team.
No knock.
You're kind of selling Hall as a great move for the Devils, but selling him as a be careful, not a good move for the other 30 teams. I don't know why.
If I'm Taylor Hall, staying with the Devils would be appealing.
Yeah.
They can pay me a lot for a long period of time.
Yeah.
They got some good young players there, and they seem to want him. So if I'm Taylor Hall, all those things would be pretty appealing to me.
I don't think it's crazy either that I get why the feel is that it's probably going to go a different direction, but I look at it and I say, yeah, I can see why if he were to really start thinking about it and maybe the Devils come forward with a really fair offer that he might look at it and say that eighth year and staying there might be the way to go. And I think he'll get offers in free agency. I think that he will get paid if he goes there. But I'm really curious as to whether or not the Devils are able to convince him to stay going forward. And I think it would be as much as a marketing thing for them to say, look, we kept our guy as anything else for them to keep him.
And the UFA landscape has really changed over the last 2 or 3 years, don't you think, guys? Teams are not as willing as they were to commit long-term to a guy and pay him big money as a UFA.
We just saw, 2 summers ago, the biggest ever UFA signing? I mean, I don't know. Like Tavares, is that not a decent kind of comparable for Hall in the sense that they've been leaders, central figures, guys that are getting votes for the heart? Like, I don't think Taylor Hall's in trouble if he gets to July 1 looking for money. This is not a Jake Gardner situation that's about to unfold. I think there are a ton of teams.
I think he'll get paid. I do.
If you're trying to sell me that July 1's not going to be good for him, I'm just not really going to buy that.
I just don't know if it's going to be as good as re-signing with the Devils would be.
And will he be able to make up that eighth year elsewhere? I can see that if you were to go to free agency and the max you can get is 7 years, would they be able to? If you're looking for just max compensation, the Devils might be the place to stay. We'll see. And who knows?
He didn't say much about it
in the locker room today, that's for sure.
No, and I'm sure he doesn't know what other teams are offering. He won't ever know unless he gets to July 1, right?
Yep.
So we can't. At this juncture, we don't know. I would just say if I get the chance to negotiate with one GM or 31, I know where I'm sliding my bet where I'm going to get the highest AAV. Guys competing against each other for my services.
Eric Karlsson didn't go down that road.
Nope.
And lots of other guys don't.
I mean, that's incredibly normal in San Jose. Yeah. That's how things go there, typically. Like Pavelski not doing that and going to free agency. That was
a bit of a shock.
Mm-hmm.
All right, gentlemen. The Flames and Devils tonight at 7 o'clock. That is your Daily Flames Roundtable.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. This hockey season, you can view over 70 vehicles in their warm showroom. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.